This week on Law & Disorder, we'll look into one of the most underreported stories of the last few months, the October Plan. The plan is a Bush administration effort, supposedly to stop terrorism, but what it really does is round up Muslim and Arabs who they believe have violated immigration laws and might be a threat to national security. It went into effect on November 2nd or prior to then, when they wanted to round up people prior to the election, and it will again be in effect prior to the inauguration on January 20th. Also, we'll have a look at what we can expect from both protesters and police at the presidential inauguration in Washington, D.C. We know what to expect from the police. More and more suppression of dissent. We'll also give a little background as to what happened in this election. We'll have Marsha Johnson, a lawyer from New York, who is a poll watcher in Florida, give some really harrowing stories about what happened when people wanted to vote in Florida. And we're also bringing to the station two well-known authors, Howard Zinn, who will discuss his new book, Voices of a People's History of the United States, and his recent role starring in the play Guantanamo, Honor Bound to Defend Freedom. And we also have the author of a new book on Guantanamo, David Rose, here to discuss his book as well. Welcome to Law & Disorder. Welcome to Law & Disorder. I'm Michael Ratner, President of the Center for Constitutional Rights.
I'm Dalia Hashad, Arab-Muslim South Asian Advocate for the ACLU.
I'm Heidi Boghossian, Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild.
And I'm Michael Stephen Smith, New York City attorney and author. The great civil liberties attorney Bill Kunstler saw it coming. The police state is emerging, he warned. It's coming piece by piece, before and especially since September 11th. And at a certain point, it'll be irreversible.
Here on Law & Disorder, we four attorneys and activists will strive to be your eyes and ears, your early warning system, your educators, counselors, and advocates. We'll talk about the laws, practices, and procedures that we believe are strangling democracy. We'll be in the courts, in the books, on the streets, and here on the radio with you.
We'll be lawyers you'll like.
Some critics, the pre-election polls were an accurate way to see this country's voters break for Kerry or Bush. In the end, the polls favored Kerry as the country's next president. However, the voting machine tallies favored Bush heavily. This disparity prompted many investigations, not by Democrats or the mainstream media, but through citizens' groups. Reliable press reports give us just a sampling of the problems. In Broward County, Florida, electronic voting machines counted backwards. As more people voted, the official vote count actually went down. In one Columbus, Ohio suburb, election officials have acknowledged that electronic voting machines credited Bush with winning 4,258 votes. Only 638 people actually voted there. And finally, in one North Carolina county, electronic voting machine problems caused more than 4,500 votes to be lost. These problems are representative not just of issues in this past election, but of systematic problems that regularly disenfranchise marginalized voters all across our 13,000 counties in the United States in every election that we have. Like thousands of people across the country, New York City Attorney Marsha Johnson anticipated the problems in this election and heeded the call of the Kerry campaign to become an election protection worker. In a letter, she had this to say to Senator Kerry.
Dear Senator Kerry, I'm an African-American New York attorney, one of the thousands of lawyers who heeded the call of the Kerry campaign and went down to Florida as a volunteer voting rights attorney. I am writing you to express my utter dismay at your early concession of the race. This election was not only about you. It was also about the scores of voters who stood for hours in the blazing heat in order to have their votes counted. This was also about the college students in Ohio who waited until midnight to cast their ballots, notwithstanding the corporate news media's proclamation that the election was already over. It also belongs to the many voters in Broward County who realized too late that the electronic touchscreen had changed their votes without their knowledge. Tomorrow, you will still have your Senate position, but the disenfranchised will have lost their faith that the Democratic Party is really their advocate. Simply put, we deserved your voice, your outrage at the unjust practices that were committed during this election. You were in a unique position to demand time to investigate mass voter suppression in urban communities. You had the ability to speak for the young Latino men who waited for over 3 hours to cast their vote and listened to me when I assured them that their votes would be counted, even after a GOP poll worker tried to intimidate them by illegally recording their Social Security numbers. You abandoned the thousands of young lawyers like myself who prevented scores of illegal challenges to black voters and placed their bodies between the election workers and malfunctioning machines. Your decision also effectively silenced the testimony of the servicemen and women who cast absentee ballots from Iraq, naively believing your promise that hope was on the way.
Right on, Marcia. You know, it's the same phenomena that happened 4 years ago when they stole the election in Florida, and Jesse Jackson wanted to organize a big demonstration protesting against it, and the leadership of the Democratic Party said, "Don't you dare," and they sat on him. I remember that poignant part in Michael Moore's movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, when you had Gore as the head of the Senate, and they needed one person in the Senate, because they had a lot of black congressmen, but there's no black senators. They needed one senator to protest so they could look into it. And Gore kept hammering down everybody. Gore, the loser, kept doing it.
Absolutely.
So you have to ask yourself, what are we talking about here with the Democratic Party? What are they?
You know, what was amazing to me, for a second, we allowed ourselves to believe that Kerry was serious about this. And this was not just politics, but this was really about the vindication of people's rights. And that 2000 wasn't going to happen again. And so, I mean, I wrote the letter out of just, I was so angry right then. Just because, I mean, I thought, listen, let the votes be counted. It doesn't matter if the outcome doesn't change, but let people get the voice that they're trying to express. And in particular, I had these young men who stayed with me for hours, and I just felt so compelled to write this letter because it felt like we, or the Democratic Party, was complicit in stealing that voice at that point. And it was so just heart-wrenching for me to think about the promises that were made explicitly from the campaign, but also directly from those of us who were on the ground.
Yeah, no, I know exactly how you feel. For me, the lesson was, paraphrase Kevin Phillips, who was Ronald Reagan's speechwriter and knows about these things, and he, to paraphrase him, he said the Democratic Party is the establishment's second favorite party. So the way they got it set up is that either way they win. They don't want to have any uncertainty about the votes, because either way they win, it didn't matter for them, and I think that's the answer to why they didn't do what we wanted them to do.
Marcia, just tell our listeners a bit about yourself.
I'm a litigator at Simpson, Thatcher & Bartlett here in the city.
And are you going to stay involved in follow-up?
We're going to still do it. We're going to still try. We're going to figure out, though, where to cast our eggs, because I don't know if it's necessarily within the party anymore. And maybe the answer is to work outside. And maybe Nader wasn't so crazy after all. And we need to start doing some external organizing.
Tell me about some of the most serious problems that either you as an election protection worker saw or that you heard from your colleagues doing election protection.
Things that I saw directly were there was a GOP poll worker at my site. And initially, we were supposed to be staying outside. Since I wasn't a Florida barred attorney, the deal was supposed to be that Kerry's campaign was supposed to send a Florida attorney inside, and we were going to be the outside attorneys. But, you know, when all hell started to break loose, I was like, why am I the only one following the law here, you know? And what started to happen was there were a bunch of young men, particularly because my polling site was a high school. And so there were, and all this crap about the youth not coming out. I mean, at least my little sampling, there were tons of kids, like 18 years old, 19 years old, kids coming in with their parents. And it's like a lot of pride, a lot of excitement, a lot of vote or die t-shirts. And I had a couple young men who had gone to the high school and had registered there, in fact, but had moved on, but they actually had registration cards. And this was the saddest part, and this was what I saw happening for the whole day. And this wasn't just kids. There were a lot of adults who had voted for years and years at this particular polling site were told, oh, you can't vote here. The sites have been changed. And but the most tragic part was that the address on their polling cards was the exact address where we were. Mm. And so what they were doing was sending people back and forth, not confirming. What they were supposed to do was confirm by calling the supervisor of elections. And so it was incredibly frustrating for people who had waited forever. Plus, the machines had broken down in the morning. People were angry and frustrated. There was a GOP worker, there's one really important point, that when the young men, these two young men, two Latino young men, were standing there, and I'm talking to these kids, and I'm like, listen, you stay here, and we're going to fight this out. There was a process by which the young men could write an affidavit saying that they are who they say they are, they live where they say they live, and, you know, provide their driver's licenses as evidence. And the affidavit actually asked them for their Social Security numbers. Now, the GOP worker was standing behind the young men, writing down their Social Security numbers at one point. One of the young men recognized what was happening and turned around and was like, you can't do that. He was furious, and rightly he should have been. And so one of the other lawyers that was there said to the clerk, listen, this is intimidation. This guy shouldn't be in here writing down anyone's Social Security numbers. That you have absolutely no reason to do that. And she told the clerk to ask him to stop and to give back the piece of paper with the number. The clerk, you know, he was online with the busy signal for 12 hours. He really just ignored everything that we said. So then she basically asked him to give back the Social Security number. He refused. And then she took it out of his hand and ripped it up. I mean, because this kid was literally furious. Because of course the implication there is that they're going to follow up somehow. And then this man was getting in their faces and saying, the challenge process is supposed to be a seamless, you're supposed to write down your challenge and upon real evidence, not hearsay, they're supposed to be able to decide and deliberate and then make a decision. Now, this guy was not doing a written challenge. He was in their faces. I'm going to challenge you. I don't believe you, et cetera, et cetera.
This is the Republican guy.
Yes, this was the Republican guy who was there. And
he comes right into the polling place, and while the person is casting the vote,
actually even standing behind the table where the clerk was, which is against the law.
Right.
And he's standing there, and that's giving him an appearance of authority that he didn't really have.
And these were mostly black people he was challenging?
Mostly black people and Latinos. He was also questioning people because people thought they had to talk to him. And so for 90% of the day when I was outside, I had my poll worker calling me and telling me, you know, this guy is nuts. This guy is nuts. What can I do?
What kind of questions was he asking people?
He was like, you know, where do you live? How long have you lived here? I mean, like literally interrogating people. I had two young women leave after 2 hours. One of them started crying. And I said to her, you do not leave. We literally, it was 7 o'clock or 7:30 when the polling was supposed to be over. And the lawyers, we all went in at that point. And we were like, listen, you have to give these people their due process. You have to either try to get through the supervisor's office. You have to then deliberate, whatever the process was in Florida for them to make a decision about whether or not the ballot was going to be provisional or regular. And so then these young women who were just so tired and so frustrated and so angry. One of them she started crying and she was like, you know what? I'm tired of this. Because he was asking her date of birth, where she had been, how long she'd been in the country.
The Republican.
Yes. And she was a Latina and he was asking her how long she had been in the country. And I was like, this is ridiculous. He has so at this point I'm telling people, you don't have to talk to this man at all. You know, don't give him any more information about yourself. Because if he doesn't have any independent evidence that you don't have a right to vote, then he shouldn't be getting it from you and then trying to use that against you.
So they're letting this man do whatever he wants and not saying a thing.
Uh-huh.
You know what it reminds me of? Mm-hmm. 4 years ago, when the Republicans sent people down from Washington to stop the recount in Dade County. Remember that?
Right. Yeah. And entrenched, like, starting kind of arguments with people. I mean, like, I think this guy's tactic, Christopher, he was a kind of a big cop-looking guy. And so, I mean, I think he wanted to start something with these kids. Like, because if they had, one of them said, told him, I'm going to punch you out. Like, if you don't back up off, you know, back up off me, I'm gonna hate you. And it's like he wanted that to happen. Because if that had happened, then he had an argument to have the kids removed.
When Michael was alluding to the 1960 election and nationwide election when Kennedy won and Nixon lost, and Kennedy won because he got the state of Illinois. Mm. I'm from Chicago, and the slogan there was, you know, it, vote early and often.
Right.
And Mayor Daley stole the election for the Democratic Party because, it's like Michael said, it's run on a local level. But, you know, if you step back, that's just one of the aspects of the fix is in. Mm-hmm. You start from the problem. It's very hard for a third party to get on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Then if they get on the ballot, it's very hard for them to get any kind of press.
Right.
And the rules are, well, if you don't have a big following, we can't give you any press. So that's kind of self-fulfilling because you can't get a big following because no one knows what you stand for. So I understand your disgust.
And part of the problem for me, just in general, was this whole rush to within a couple hours, you know, but before the night is over, while we're still in prime time, to call the election. And I'm like, the fact that people were still standing online, the fact that votes were still, absentee votes were not even opened. I mean, like, is there really is there really going to be civil war in this country if we wait 2 days and count votes? And so at least people feel vindicated, like, okay, well, you know, we lost fair and square. And so that was part of this, the process that really just didn't go down correctly for me. Because I'm like, they're still counting. How are we calling anything? I mean, like, you know, and then this whole, you know, exit polls versus whatever. But the fact that people were still online, let their votes be counted. What is the problem? I mean, the uncertainty that they claim to be afraid of exists even more so when folks can say fairly, listen, my vote wasn't even counted. I don't know what would have happened had they counted my vote.
I think the answer to that is that about 40% of the eligible voters didn't even go out to vote. Mm-hmm. So Bush probably got about 30% of all the eligible voters in the country. This is not a mandate. Mm-hmm. He says he's got a lot of political capital and he's ready to spend it. He doesn't have that much. It's smoke and mirrors. Because it's minority rule in this country, they don't want it to be minority rule that people suspect.
Thanks, Marsha Johnson, for joining us here in the studio.
Thanks, Marsha. Thanks for having me.
We'd like to remind listeners it's not too late to donate to the station, pledge for premiums, or even become members of WBAI. Simply call 1-800-228-5599 at any time, 24 hours a day.
Ever looked over a mountain? One you ain't never seen. Have you ever looked over a mountain? A mountain you've never seen. Have you ever laid down in your bed and had one of them lonesome dreams?